Hey, this is Stefan Alexander. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? This is Scott here and Mike down there. You know, down there. And
here I am. I'm waving at them, Scott. Maybe they'll see me.
Oh, good, good. It's a good thing we don't do video, because I think people would just be, I don't know. Maybe we should do video so people can see what I get to see, what that goes on during this broadcast.
Well, I'd like to think that I push our audience to have their own imagination about what's going on, you know. If it's kind of the lore of, like, old-time radio, so I just want them to think in their head and all, this amazing manly man, Mike, is waving at his partner, Scott, who's nondescriptive.
So you, in your so you think, like, it would be, like, kind of one of those things where you saw, like, I don't know, you saw like a singer you liked or a radio, like a DJ for the first time, people are like, oh man, that's not what I pictured him to look like. You think people are building you up into this maybe, I don't know, like a wrestling type figure, like this Adonis type body with this booming voice.
Yeah, I mean, I can't fathom what else they could imagine when they hear this rumbling coming out of my throat.
All right, so let me ask you something. When... If you were a listener to the show and you were listening to me and you and you heard your voice, what celebrity pops into your head like that maybe is comparable?
Celebrity. I'm trying to think of a celebrity. I mean, maybe not a celebrity, but if you played a Mortal Kombat games, maybe like a Johnny Cage looking kind of person, you know, with the sunglasses and the tattoo on the chest that says Burroughs, you know.
So in your head, you think people are picturing you to look like Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat?
Yeah, and you know, every once in a while, if you get out of line, they throw a green fireball at you, and everything's good.
So really, it's not even in anybody else's mind, because that is you playing the role of the audience. So really, you think that you resemble a Johnny Cage-like figure. Or maybe alter ego you would like to pursue.
Well, I feel I am the voice of the audience, Scott, so I can only assume they agree with me. You know, I don't talk with them at all, but I can only assume what comes in my mind is similar to what everybody else is saying.
It's becoming more and more interesting to hear how you visualize yourself in the schematics of the show, like how you see yourself, you know, like the voice of the audience, people thinking you look like Johnny Cage, mm-hmm. the real driving force behind the cast, I guess you can say.
Yeah. I mean, I could totally see, like, when we retire, like, they throw us a parade and I get the front car, you know. You'll come around after, like, the third marching band, but, you know, I'll be up in the front waving to people.
They're throwing parades now for podcasters, huh?
I mean, it's about time. I mean, come on. How long we been doing this? I think I've done enough hours to earn a parade.
Here he comes, guys. Is that Johnny Cage? No, it's Mike. Oh my god, he's coming around the corner in a dog float.
I'm throwing candy at them. They're like, oh no, it's green fireball. And they're like, oh, it's just candy. He's so cool.
So now you picture that people are just thinking how cool you are as they listen to this cast.
I mean, anytime I talk, I just wonder how cool does everybody think I am, and I answer a lot.
If you're just tuning in, that's Mike. He's the cool part of the podcast. I'm Scott.
You know it.
I just steer the ship. You know, he's more the captain. He tells me what happens and what goes on, and what the he's really, like, as he says, the voice of the audience. He tells you, tells us about what you guys want, what you want more of, less of, who you want on the show. So that really is Mike's role on the show here today. But you're tuning into Verbal Shenanigans, a weekly podcast, if you will. And we just try to bring on interesting guests and talk about life and other stuff, and Berlew's perceived ego of himself. You know, it's cool.
It's not ego when it's facts, Scott. It's a well-known fact.
I picture you in your head, like, getting all this fan mail with, like, Johnny Cage with a Verbal Shenanigans shirt on, like, hugging, you know, hugging fans, signing autographs, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been going to the post office. I don't understand where all the mail's going because it's not coming to me. So I apologize to everybody. But we'll get this straightened out. I've yelled at the post office more than once. So don't you worry, my fans.
Oh, man, God. I was eating pistachios prior to the start of this podcast. I decided not to eat them on air tonight like I normally do. You know how I like to do the first 10 minutes of the cast? Eating pistachios. It's kind of a ritual. But you guided me. You said maybe the fans don't like it. Maybe in the maybe the last 10 minutes of the podcast, I'll bust out the pistachios. But
yeah, it's like a mid-roll thing. you know, something where you're like, hey, you know that elephant that eats pistachios? So does Scott Brennan.
Yeah, like yesterday I was like taking a blind off the window, whatever that thing's called. The window. Yes, a window. And I don't know, like the little clamp or whatever went like under my fingernail and like, you know, like stabbed me under the fingernail. And then I was just eating pistachios and now I have like salt and pepper in the wound of the thing. And I am just, I'm in a good amount of pain doing this cast right now. I'm kind of like a martyr. I'm kind of like really pushing through just to bring entertainment to the crowd.
I mean, if we got to warm somebody up, you know, I'll call Joe Fernandez in, and he'll sub in for you. He'll be your Eli Manning for tonight.
you ever get, what's the, you, I mean, I'm sure you've done hot sauce in the eye before, right?
I've had hot sauce in the eye. I had the very hard feeling of the Bengay on the groin feeling.
Ah.
It was not pleasant, and I tried to tough it out. Like, it was one of those, like, it was like an inner calf thing, and it went a little too high, and you start feeling the burning. You're like, it's fine. I'll work through this. And somehow Bengay just keeps on going, you know. It's a weird, it just knows it's on a sensitive area, and it's like, no, I'm going to turn this up in our 10 degrees, and then
well, you say you
before
try to,
I knew it, I was just ripping my clothes off and running into the shower.
Couple arrests later, yada yada yada.
Yeah, I was outside, so it was very awkward.
Never doing that in church again. yeah. I like how you say you push through. Like, what is the solution to it? Isn't it just one of those things that has to just, I don't know, kind of work its way out? Like, I don't know if a shower helps.
No, it worked. I mean, just get a wash rag and just dig in, and hopefully you take off that layer that's burning like the seventh layer of hell.
How's that visual for you guys? Michael DeBerlo just digging in, getting rid of his Bengay burns on his groin.
Well, they're imagining it happening to Johnny Cage, so they're all into this, Scotty.
Oh, yeah. You know what? What was funny is I didn't even think that there was that big of a market for Johnny Cage. Still, like, there's like, I didn't know so many women were into Johnny Cage right now. Seems a little dated.
MK11 came out just like 6 months ago, so it's not that dated.
Is he still in the game, Johnny Cage?
Yeah, they still have their regulars, Johnny Cage, Sonya, Kung Lao, Liu Kang, Scorpion, Sub-Zero. Those regulars pop up, and then they bring in some new characters, they bring in some old characters, and then they get to the area where DLC, they'll bring in guest characters.
Ah, like Michael Berlew versus Johnny Cage. That would be...
It's a mirror match! let's see what their guest characters were. It's gonna be the Terminator has come out,
really?
But they gotta they have the Terminator look, but they got a guy who did the worst Arnold impression ever, so it's kind of off there. The Joker is coming in January because they're owned by WB, so that's the whole, it's out on DVD now, we got to promote it. And I think Spawn is March.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing that those games can kind of keep reinventing themselves and people keep buying them. Like, I mean, I've seen them before. I have friends who are like still into that, but like fighting games never really grabbed me that much. I played them for a little while and I never kept playing them after, I remember, like, Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat back in the day.
They had, like, a weird little arc where, as the technology got better, it actually, the fighting got worse, and then they had to bring it back. Because when it started off, it's your regular 2D scroller, and then we had that little stretch there where it's like, oh, we got all these graphics, let's make it 3D, and then you had to play around with, you have to like circle around people and try to line things up, which just annoyed everybody. So they kind of, now they've gone to like a story mode and brought it back to the 2D fighting.
Do you still play those games, or you just know what's going on?
I just know what's going on. Like I kind of like watching the videos of the storylines of it, because they actually make some good stories for the video games. That's why it's so popular. Like, they'll make a story mode would be like 4 hours, and it's like a real long, intense movie. So
you just follow primarily Johnny Cage, though, just in case the fans.
You got to know the whole scene. What I'm doing, you know. Sometimes I don't have a mirror by me, so I watch a Johnny Cage video to go, all right, there I am.
Yeah. You getting in the Christmas spirit, Berlew? Has it hit you at all? I mean, you live in Christmas for basically a month longer than most people.
I actually did a little weird experiment for myself. Like, as I was
melting ice again.
No, that's an everyday routine, but we do not forget that. Just out of the blue, like, I was driving into work, and for the people who are just joining us for the first time, so a little quick backstory. When I was younger, my mom was the queen of Christmas music, and by that I mean from Halloween until a week into New Year, 16 hours a day, every Christmas CD, cassette, record to ever exist, blasting out of the stereo nonstop in a day. So I got a real kind of irking, kind of scratching the chalkboard feeling when I used to listen to any sort of Christmas music. So out of the blue, I just said, you know what? I got the series here. They're promoting this Christmas radio channel just for the fun of it. Let's see how long I can last listening to it. And what I can say, the results of the experiment is I didn't get angry, but okay. I didn't get feelings for it. So I actually like could listen to it for a half an hour and occasionally get one that's good, kind of like Band-Aid. Do they know it's Christmas time at all? That's probably about one of the few I'm really like, okay, I like that. But
don't you get a blast of Christmas from your wife at home?
The Christmas tree came up relatively quick. I think it was like a week, like the weekend after Halloween it came up. But we haven't done outdoor decorations. It might be too late for us to do outdoor decorations.
Right.
She doesn't, like, when she's running, she'll blast it in her ears, but I don't get to hear it. So I'm not getting an overload.
Okay.
And then, and kind of add to it, like, the parents are in Florida right now. There's questions even if we're getting together for Christmas. So it's not like, all right, everything's getting shoved in my face for the upcoming holiday.
Yeah, so I guess I unlock the Christmas activities this weekend. The whole decorating, getting a tree, putting lights outside, all that kind of thing. But I'll tell you about the So this is another kind of lake tradition. There is a
lake life.
Yep. So in the lake, as I've told you, I volunteered for the men's club, which is, you know, just kind of a club that does things around the lake and, I don't know, watches Monday Night Football and drinks beer. I don't know, nothing crazy. So they every year they host a Christmas tree sale. And basically you go down there and they have a giant fire pit and coolers of beer. And basically, you just help anyone that comes in and buys trees.
About how many men fall into the fire pit on average every year?
Funny you say that. They said like 3 years ago, because I only went one other time before this. They said like 3 or 4 years ago, someone fell into the lake and fell asleep on the side of the lake, which I thought was pretty pretty accurate. But so I didn't get to go. Apparently Friday's the big day. I had a show in Yardley, Pennsylvania on Friday. So I didn't.
My cousin lives there.
Yeah. So I didn't get to stop by Friday, but I stopped by Saturday. And so really, I didn't do anything. I was just kind of sitting around BSing. There's some food there, whatnot. But there's this guy, Tommy, that I meet. And I got to tell you, he's the best tree salesman I ever saw in my entire life. Like, this guy, someone would come, he'd start walking to him. He'd be like, you know, like, we started calling him Tommy Trees. I was like, that's Tommy Trees. He could sell a tree.
Double T coming over. He going to get the sale.
He's going to give you the tree special. You know, this guy, he would take the tree. He would spin the tree around, hold it for you, step back, like, so you could see the size of the tree, kind of model the tree. And he was selling trees out the wazoo. He would go pick one, and the family would take it. We were just, the whole time, we're just sitting back like, Tommy Trees. You can't compete with Tommy Trees. Tommy Trees could sell you two trees. Tommy Trees is the kind of guy like, yeah, one tree is so last year. You need a tree in the bathroom. You ever have a tree in the bathroom? It's just, you put it right in the shower. You shower with the tree, pine soap, everything. Tommy Trees will get it for you. Okay,
he'll call trees for tree digits for Tommy Trees.
We were like joking around, like, oh yeah, you know, like if they were $55 a tree, he'd be like, yeah, for you, I could do two for 110. Take them home today. We're like, Tommy could set you into a 4-year contract, you know, like that. You have to buy trees for the next 4 years from this. This guy was amazing.
Listen, you put this tree on layaway, you send the payments, I'm going to give you your tree January 7th, guaranteed. Tommy Trees does not lie.
Tommy Trees, I work with my partner, Dougie Fur, and we sell trees up and down the East Coast. He's the best tree salesman in the world. It made me want to like make a sketch about Tommy Trees, like a tree sale that can't really sell any. They're like, you know who we got to call. And everybody's like, oh, no. Oh no! Like, we got
get on the phone to Dan Bill. Tommy Trees got to get down here.
And I just picture this like gangster type guy, like Italian guy selling trees. Like, oh, it's Tommy Trees. You can sell three trees to anybody. Best tree salesman on the East Coast.
Meanwhile, outside the holidays, he's that dude that twiddles the sign to get you into the mattress.
Exactly. Tax season comes, he's like,
you know, Tommy Trees thinks H&R Block is for you.
So I got my tree, whatever, after that, hung out for a couple hours, went back home, and we start to set the tree up, and they were kind of fat trees. My wife likes really skinnier trees. She doesn't like the heavy set trees, if you will. She calls them Christmas bush. She's like, that's a bush. And I got it up in the stand. And I was like, okay. A little, they're always bigger than you kind of picture them once you put them up. And they're like, oh, okay. So she's like, I'm not going to decorate that with you. It's too big. I'm like, are you kidding me? She's like, no, I want you. I want you to go get the hedge trimmer. And I want you to carve the tree to reshape it a little bit.
This sounds like an adventure. Continue.
Yeah. So I, you know, first Christmas in the house, first tree and married together, you know, got to do what you got to make the wife happy. So I go outside, get my hedge trimmer, and there I am in the middle of the living room. Extension cord, hedge trimming this tree into what I think looks like a very nice triangle. And I got to say, it did look a little better after the trimming. But I think it was up to her. She would have had me like working for maybe like an hour, hour and a half, really perfecting this tree to look like a perfect symmetrical triangle. So not to mention the mess in the living room, the amount of branches and pine needles and... but I was able to get her to say, oh, that looks nice, and put the tree back.
It would be great if somebody was passing by and then calls like 911 saying there's some guy with a chainsaw sawing up a really fat person in his living room for some reason.
So I trimmed the tree for the wife, and all is well. My dog is still afraid of trees. When he was little, he used to... try to chew the branches off the bottom of the tree and try to drink the water. And then one day he was behind the tree and all of a sudden I hear, and he chewed through one of the lights and electrocuted the hell out of himself. Like jumped on the couch, like wouldn't move, shaking. And since then he avoids the tree, like completely. He also, when he was little, one day I came downstairs and I noticed he wasn't opening his eyes. I'm like, what the hell is going on, man? What's up, Bob? He wouldn't open his eyes. So I take him to the vet, and he had a piece of tree needle in his eye. Like he must have had an ulcer or something like that. And he had like a little piece in that just irritated his eyes, and his eyes were like swollen shut. And now they made like drops out of his own blood or something like that. And they're like, look, you got to administer these drops like 3 times a day, okay? I don't know if you've ever tried to give a dog eye drops.
Can't say I have, but I'm sure it's pleasant.
It was pretty – I think I got him in maybe 3 times while he was sleeping. I tried to be like – and like drop it in his eye real quick. But you know dogs, they could smell. They sense everything in 2 seconds. You know, I think I probably wasted 9/10 of the eyedropper roll. To get in there. So needless to say, he's kind of cautious around trees now, between electrocuting himself and taking his eyeballs out. And then,
just looking over, and oh, it's like, we meet again.
Yeah.
Son of a, I'm going to get you this year.
And, of course, I got to take him to the vet again tomorrow. The dog's like licking his paws constantly. His ears all jacked up. He's scratching it till it like bleeds. Yeah, so it's another trip to the vet. Which is always fun, you know. It's always you're not leaving there under under $150, but
no.
We'll see what happens.
I'm just curious who figured out to pour a dog's own blood into its eyes to solve vision problems.
I don't know. It was like they like spun the blood and got some kind of protein or something from the blood that helps them eyes. I have no idea. It was pretty interesting, but again, it was a colossal waste because I probably got it in there twice. But I think let's segue. I know that's Christmas trees and dog
from
injuries.
From injured dogs to our first guest.
Yes. Shifted a little bit so we can stop talking about lake life and selling Christmas trees. And so we got our good friends at Ray B. They hooked me up with a man by the name of Stefan Alexander, and he is an artist out of, I believe he lives in Brooklyn in New York, and he is an artist he's a queer artist, makes a lot of songs in LGBT community, and he has a pretty interesting story, just released some new music, and we're going to get into some of the stuff that he's actually suffered from. Which I think makes him pretty interested. So let's get Stefan on the line.
All right.
All right. We are good to go. Stefan, what's up?
Awesome. Hey.
What's going on?
How you doing?
Man? I'm doing good, man. First off, thanks for giving us a few minutes on the show here.
Of course.
So are you in Brooklyn as we speak?
I am in Manhattan right now.
What?
I got kept at work. I just worked for 11 hours, so I'm still at the studio.
Why would you do that?
Not by choice.
So, Stefan, we were hooked up with you. We were sent some information and able to kind of check out some of your stuff. And Cool. I kind of looked over your social media and your music and whatnot. So you got a lot of different things going on as far as artistically. I guess it's always good to kind of start. Did you grow up a musician? Did you grow up guitar or piano or singing or acting? Where did you like really kind of get your start cutting your teeth in, as far as music?
Well, I actually started playing cello when I was six.
Cello.
So I guess that was sort of the intro.
All right. And did you keep up with it, or did you kind of like?
Well, when I was 12, I had to change teachers because I was no longer at the elementary school that I was at.
Right.
And this new teacher, I don't know, had some bone to pick, and he was so aggressive that he made me hate the instrument, so I stopped, and then I switched to guitar.
I feel really bad. I have this image of you like, I don't know, just letting your cello go and gather dust in the corner of the room, and it just not happening anymore.
I mean, yeah.
Was your teacher J.K. Simmons by any chance?
I don't understand that reference, and I feel bad.
All right, so from cello, where did you go?
Guitar. And then I did actually end up going back to cello for a couple of years at the end of high school. But continued to play guitar. Then I played mandolin when I was in college. Then back to guitar.
Nice.
Yeah, that's the sort of the instrumental journey.
So what kind of made you think about going more vocal versus instruments?
Well, I always sang. So I started recording my own music when I was about 13 or 14. My mom had GarageBand on her laptop, and I just played around with it. And, you know, figured out how to loop and how to do all kinds of stuff. And then I started writing songs and would spend like 10 hours like on a Saturday just recording.
So now... So you've been doing music kind of all along, but did it ever turn a point where you're like, okay, I'm done. I don't need school, or I'm trying not to do the work thing, and I want to focus just on the music. When did that actually start?
Well, that never,
not yet.
Never happened.
It's gonna happen.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
But I went to college for music, and then. Yeah, just been working.
Don't you worry.
Day jobs to try to make to afford to continue to make music and do whatever projects I've wanted to do.
I mean, after this podcast, dude, you're never gonna have to work another day in your life.
That's the idea. That's the idea.
I gotta be honest. God gives me the same line every week I show up, and we just keep coming back for more. So I don't know if you want to take it.
Does that mean I'm gonna be back every week?
That's fine.
All right.
Honestly,
all right, we're a trio now.
Am I a new host?
Honestly, Mike's been wearing pretty thin, so I'm open to bringing in someone else. So we need a new audience anyway. So I'm sure you've got your own audience to bring in.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm fully willing to give them all to you.
So when you're starting to develop your own music, or is it just something that's private for you to share maybe with the family, or are you one of them open people, hey, come over, check out my new song I've been trying out?
I think I always shared it with a couple people, and then, you know, eventually put it online when I was like 17, started putting it online. Or maybe I probably had like a MySpace page with a couple things.
Wow, stop bragging.
I knew a little HTML back in the day. Let me tell you.
Wow, what was your song when you was it your song or was it somebody else's song on your?
Oh no, it's my song. No, I didn't just embed some music and then call myself a musician.
Oh, don't listen. After this, you'll be in our top eight on our MySpace page. So don't worry about it.
Wow, yeah? Thank you. This is that's really the goal now. It's it's TikTok now, and then it's going to go back to MySpace.
I guarantee there will be throwback. Exactly. Throwback social media will be a thing very soon.
Well, millennials are so nostalgic, so...
It'll be right after the new Ghostbusters movie comes out.
Gotta say, I'm looking forward to that maybe a little bit more than the return of MySpace. But that's just me. That's just me. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I got to get into this. You know, looking up, you are very open about a illness, a chronic illness you have. I had hardly really heard of it. And then I kind of went down a wormhole a little bit, kind of typing things into Google. You got to explain. So what is it that you deal with? And it sounds pretty pretty crippling at some points.
It was for a long time. I couldn't play guitar for 4 years. And then after a year of that, I couldn't sing for 3. So I really couldn't make almost any music unless I got wasted.
Really?
Which is not sustainable. Or
it's funny because that's the only time I make music.
Oh, hey.
No, but what were you diagnosed with?
So it took all 4 of those years to get a diagnosis. Jeez. And the diagnosis is called central sensitization syndrome. Okay. And it's this central neurological condition where your brain can hardwire injuries. So it doesn't know that it's healed itself. So you keep on, it's like a phantom limb, but a phantom injury.
Huh.
So yeah, I mean, you just continue to have pain forever unless you intervene, which was
so
what I had to learn how to do.
So like, I guess I'm trying to understand. So you, I don't know, maybe like, for example, would you be like, oh man, suddenly my, I don't know, my wrist is killing me, and then like it would kind of continue to hurt even if nothing happened? Is that how that works?
Well, I would have real injuries. So okay. Like I had, my arm started hurting because I had tendonitis.
Right.
Which is a very common guitar-related injury. Mm-hmm. But it just never went away. Despite the fact that, you know, I'd get an MRI and they wouldn't see anything. That's the crazy thing about it, is that there's nothing to see. Because the injury is gone, but your brain doesn't know it.
Now, are these... Yeah, that's crazy. Are these, like, more... like bone and breaks and sprains, or are you, is your body actually thinking you have like some internal things going on too while you going through this?
It's mostly bones and bone breaks and
right.
sprains and okay. like soft tissue injuries, but I got my tonsils out, and that's what started my throat pain. And then I also had to have a fucking testicular operation. Jeez. And that caused a chronic scrotal itch, which is
wow. Which is also the name of your new single.
Hey, what a fun through line. That's great.
Chronic scrotal itch. That sounds like the worst 3 words ever put together.
It was awful. It felt like I had jock itch for a year and a half.
Oh my god. So I mean, how are you dealing with the? I mean, what is worse, like the physical pain or just the mental pain of like doctors saying, nope, we don't see anything, Damn. You're perfectly fine?
I mean, how can I separate them? You know, it all happened at the same time. I mean, it was like the worst of it was just the not knowing, and the, I mean, I tried like 150 different interventions, and I saw dozens of doctors, and I took dozens of medications, and spent thousands of dollars of the money that I'd saved to try to figure this out. And then this whole time, I can't do the thing that I've always wanted to do. I can't do the thing I went to college for. I can't do the thing that all of my friends are building their careers in.
Right.
I just felt so stagnant, you know?
So now does that start to make you feel almost crazy? Like there's something wrong with you? Like as far as like, people maybe think I'm imagining this or making this up. where, you know, but you know that you're going through this? Is it starting to play with your mind for all this time?
A little bit, but I always had one or two doctors that thought that I just hadn't found the diagnosis.
Okay.
And they would throw out crazy, like Mediterranean scarlet fever or some shit, whatever the fuck, you know, like,
which is the second song on the album.
Wow. Thank you so much. I'm throwing these softballs, but you're catching them all.
Or itchy ones.
So yeah. I never really questioned it. I mean, I did end up going to like a psychologist and trying to figure out if it was some sort of psychosomatic, psychogenic mm-hmm. thing that I just, but they ruled that out too. They were like, no, like you really are experiencing this, because all the interventions that they knew how to do, like self-hypnosis and different types of treatments that you would normally use for that type of thing, weren't working. Plus, psychosomatic conditions, I guess, are they usually have sort of a logical or a logic behind them. Like, oh, you can't sing because of some, like, maybe you have stage fright or you're afraid of success, or you're like, there's sort of a, like, it makes sense. It all fits together. And my condition didn't. It was like, oh no, this is your dream and you're like ready to do it mentally.
So what ended up being the treatment, I guess, if you will, or what ended up allowing you to get back to music, back on stage, back to playing guitar?
So I went to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and that's where I got my diagnosis, because none of the doctors in New York knew about this condition. So Mayo Clinic is one of the best hospitals in the world,
right.
And I was lucky enough to have really robust insurance through my job at the time. So I was able to go out there, and I was out there first for 2 weeks and then for a month doing this treatment. And it's mostly cognitive behavioral therapy and different mindfulness techniques to basically like retrain your brain's relationship to pain. Because, you know, we as humans, pain is a signal for us to stop what we're doing, you know?
Right.
Be it putting your hand in a flame or, you know, running on a sprained ankle. Your body is giving you the signal that you're doing something wrong. And I had to, for the areas of my body that I knew, where I knew there was nothing actually wrong, I had to train my brain to ignore those signals.
Sounds easy.
Yeah, no, it was a piece of cake.
Jeez.
No, I'm still doing it. I mean, I've been doing this rehabilitative treatment for about 2.5 years, and it's been incredible, but it's been a shit ton of work, and I'll be doing it probably forever, because you know, those negative neural pathways don't really go away. They become dormant, and sometimes it'll sort of switch back, and then I'm back where I was, and I have to climb out of it again. But I have the tools to do that now.
I mean, is it just as simple as like telling your head, okay, that doesn't hurt, or you have to get into like a trance kind of mode?
It's kind of a lot of things. I mean, if it's really bad, then I do have to like do more meditation, and it's because it's, you know, it's basically an internal fight or flight response where your body is sensing some sort of danger, and you have to calm that down because that danger is not real. It's like a hallucination.
Jeez. Now, did you, did they like relate to you how many other people suffer from this or how many people experience this? It's gotta be pretty rare.
I think it's actually a lot less rare than people think.
Really?
I mean, chronic pain in general, a lot of this has been spurred by the opioid crisis.
Yeah.
The research into pain is this growing field, and they're learning that pain that lasts more than, you know, 6 or so months, that's deemed chronic pain. And in a lot of people, like, this hardwiring phenomenon seems to be a factor in that perpetual pain. So they might not have the syndrome, quote unquote, but I mean, it's a weird diagnosis because it's basically the last diagnosis when you've ruled literally every other thing out. So, but I mean, there are other elements to it, like sensitivity to light and sound and touch and temperature, all of which I have. So, like, it really makes sense for me specifically.
As you're going through this, are you still able to keep your love for your music? I know you said you couldn't, like, sing or play guitar, but were you able to, like, listen back to some of your old music or write songs during this period, or was it just totally shun you out from what you loved?
I mean, I would, like, sort of nostalgically listen to old recordings, but and just sort of hope, oh my God, I hope I can event, like, there was a lot of stuff I hadn't released yet. I was waiting till I could perform, stuff I'd recorded right before I got sick. Stuff I still haven't released. I would just sort of listen to that and with this depressed hope, just, you know, wait.
Right.
For something to change. But I definitely listened to a lot less music during that period. I got really into podcasts. Interestingly enough, which has been amazing. I mean, like, podcasts have become a super central part of my life. So,
yeah, see, our podcast has actually caused a lot of people pain. It's actually had the opposite effect. So,
Yeah.
I have to meditate to go into this show every week. So,
So Steph, let's talk about your music. You released a new single, "Oops Oh My," and you've had the Thunderclap EP, a bunch of different things. But let's talk about, I guess, the new music. And for people who are listening, kind of give us an idea of, I don't know, your style and what you have coming out.
Well, it's definitely pop music.
Yeah.
My sexuality definitely plays into it. I am a homosexual. And that is a big part of my whole artistic persona.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard. It's always hard for a musician to describe their sound.
I know. It's pretty much the worst question ever, but I have to ask it, you know?
No, I get it. But,
Well, tell us. You got "Oops Oh My" coming out, and you have a EP coming out, correct?
Yes, the EP is called "Cry Again," which I'm really excited about. I mean, it is like if Thunderclap was, you know, where I was right after my illness, then "Cry Again" is, you know, 6 months or a year later. Where I'm finally able to process that emotion and not just be in it, you know?
So does the illness and what you went through, I mean, I would find it hard to imagine that doesn't come out in your lyrics or your music. Are some of the songs and whatnot about that time?
Yeah, I mean, the title track, for sure.
Okay.
"Cry Again" is, because for that, to be candid, like, for that 4 years, I pretty much didn't cry at all. I, like, completely lost the ability to. As much as I wanted to, as much as I was feeling. And so, yeah, that title track is all about gaining access to my emotions again, or, like, the breath of my emotions.
Hey, you brought up that a lot has to do with your your sexuality being gay. Now, some performers kind of go with the, if they're like, oh, I'm gay, but I'm a singer, and this and those are two separate things. What made you want to kind of bring that into your art, your sexuality?
I mean, it's such a central part of who I am, and my community, and my politics, and my my ability to be compassionate with more and more people. You know, I'm a cisgendered white man, but so all I have all the shit that gives you undue supremacy in this country and in this world. But I have this, I'm thankful to have this one thing about myself that is minority in some capacity, if I can call it that.
Right.
I would hope that I don't understand the struggles of other people, but I mean, I try to as much as I can, but I have compassion through that, my experience as a gay person, to that hopefully I can access at least some portion of what other people of the world go through.
That's a really good answer. That was like, that could have been done at a debate right there. That was fantastic. No, that was really good.
Maybe some of the presidential hopefuls are listening, you know, and I'll hear my words on a stage.
That's what we need. We need more Democratic nominees. I think there's only 18 left.
So. Right. Oh, I thought you need more Democratic nominees in your audience.
Oh yeah,
we just need you can stop. You can take everything out besides audience in that sentence. We need more audience. That's
pretty much.
So also, I guess before we go, like also your live show. I mean, I've seen pictures and some what you've kind of posted, and it does seem like you are also kind of incorporating art and visual art into not only just kind of on stage, but yourself. It seems like you have different things going on with makeup and costumery or whatever you want to call it. How would you, is that something you consciously think about before performing? Or is it just like, hey, I'm going to wake up and figure this out today? Or is this like an image or something that you've been working on to kind of put out there on the stage?
Well, it's sort of like it's like a found visual aesthetic, because it actually all started, I guess it was 2 years ago. I was in Wisconsin visiting my grandma, who is about to turn 98, which is crazy. But she was clearing out one of her closets, and I found this like green sequin like track jacket. And
come on, in the closet. Come on.
Oh, come on. Come on. You're a better comedian than that.
No, I'm not. I am definitely not. No, I'm definitely not.
So I was like, Grandma, can I have this? And she was like, why? I was like, I just want it. And I put it on, and I was like, holy shit. This is the thing. And ever since then, I've just been. I've gotten so into thrifting and just like finding weird pieces. And I mean, my friend Riley says that my style is Hong Kong grandmother.
Another,
I will guarantee you that is a first.
Yep. Another fantastic name for a song or album.
Yeah, that's the third single. Exactly.
Hong Kong grandmother.
So I will take that on 100%. Like being comfortable, even now in the Midwest, you know, going to Green Bay, which is now Trump country, and going into a Goodwill and shopping in the women's section and getting a bunch of weird looks and just being like, whatever, you know, like,
exactly.
I look great. Fuck you.
Oh, that's awesome. That's all.
That's great, man.
Now you came out with this cover from, Oops, Oh My, from Missy Elliott. When you're making this cover, how much is it an homage to the original, and how much is it, this is my sound, taking that.
Also, why did you not wear the inflatable black suit that she wore in the video?
Yeah. That has to be
in the wear it in that video?
No, no. I forget the I just picture her, and I picture that iconic... I think it was.
I think that's.
I can't feel the rain.
Can't stop the rain.
Yeah, yeah, I can't stop.
Yeah.
You should still wear it. You should still wear it anyway. Smith-Yellett
song, but that. I mean, that's that song is much more about Tweet than it is about Missy Elliott. Missy Elliott just produced it and featured on it. Mm-hmm. So, Tweet is this like incredible image, and like in that video, like she's in like this ice hotel. Just like staring at herself in a mirror with like you can see her breath, and it's so cool. You should go back and watch the video, because it's pretty iconic. But I mean, I'd like to say it's about 50-50. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make it my own, but you know, like I didn't change like any of the words, like saying "there goes my skirt, drop into my feet." Like right. I don't wear skirts, but yep. You know, it's important to me to sing the song as it was written and not to co-opt it. There were a couple lines that were a little weird for me to sing, like "my thigh is so chocolatey brown." and like, I asked a lot of friends. I was like, is this offensive? Am I doing something wrong?
Right.
Because I really don't like, I love this song so much and I really want to sing this cover, but if it's not okay, then it's not okay. And I don't want to become some Twitter fodder, you know?
Right.
But it seems to have been okay.
Awesome.
We'll see what happens after this podcast, after I just completely...
You broke down the wall, the fourth wall there.
Exactly. That's what it's all about.
That's it.
I don't know. I just love that song so much, and it's so nostalgic for me. I have to assume that it influenced my concept of melody and my... I don't know, probably some element of who I am as like a sexual adult. Mm-hmm. I just love it.
That's good, man. So first off, I want to thank you for popping on with us. I had a really good time talking to you. Where can people
Same to you.
Where can people go to what's the best place, one, to either follow you, and two, to check out your music?
Instagram is definitely central, and my handle is Stefan Alexander, StefanAlexandr. Took out a couple vowels to mix things up, keep it spicy.
That's what keeps it spicy. Taking out vowels, yeah. People. That's how you do it.
Yeah, it's all about omission. You know, that's really the sexiest thing. I mean, hiding things. You know,
right? I got it.
Somebody wearing lingerie versus somebody completely naked. There's no mystery. You know,
that's a great analogy. Also, who would have thought taking out vowels could lead to lingerie talk? I like you.
Thank you. Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you find music. Awesome. Tidal, if people are using that, you know.
Nice. Awesome, man. So, Stefan, good luck with the EP coming out. Good luck with the singles. And I hope you can work your way out of your 11-hour workday and just where you're working on working on your music and your wardrobe, man. So, seriously, thanks a lot for coming on. We really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
Mike, how come you're not doing enough thrift shops and Sequence jackets for the podcast? You know, like I've been saying for years, we're lacking style. We're lacking something to grab the audience. And I really think it's your lack of, adventurousness, since you are the pulse of the people, as you made that clear today.
I feel... That would be a great little bit where we have to go into a thrift store with like $20 and come out with the greatest ensemble ever.
Funny.
I, I,
funny you say that. My brother's bachelor party, after I threw him the WWF party, the next morning we were going down to Atlantic City, and the whole goal was for everybody to go to the 60s thrift shop. But everybody was like too hungover to go, so only four of us went. But I did go with like $25, and I got like, I think I got a shirt with snails on it and a bulldog chain, and I had real tight like flannel, real tight checkered pants. And we went to AC, the four of us, and we were just telling people that we were the band playing at the casino.
I gave away too many clothes, like when I left for Georgia. If I recall, I had a I literally had a full denim head to toe outfit, which was like a denim collared shirt with the denim Stone Cold Steve Austin jacket.
Wow.
It's like, man, I could have got some followers on Instagram with this one if I've thought of it.
If you were still wearing Stone Cold Steve Austin attire, I don't know if I can continue doing this.
No, I think he's going to make a comeback too. I think the nerves in his neck are finally going to come back, and you know, we're going to see him face Seth Rollins now, something like that. I don't know.
Listen, he can come back, but you wearing that jacket should never come back, and it should have never happened in the first place.
No, I'm afraid, Scott, I can make it work. I mean, I'll have my, everybody's like, is that Johnny Cage wearing a Stone Cold denim jacket?
And there it is, folks. And there it is. Stefan Alexander, everybody. All right, Berloop. Before we roll on out of here, I feel like it's we haven't we've been lacking a little bit in some of our classics, if you will.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you got that classic look of Johnny Cage, but I feel like that's where we've been. That's basically it. We haven't kept up with some of our bits that have been heard around the world. That we get emails day after day. You know, you generally are our, like you said, our line to the audience.
I mean, I guess you got a valid point and all. Sometimes I get discouraged that sometimes we don't go back to the classics. So
people claiming that we're forgetting what made us. You know, we're forgetting what got us here. You know, to making no money 3, 4, 5 years later. But so I thought it was a good time to bring back a classic, and that is it's time for some bear news.
Woo! Bear news! We're talking about bear and shit. We're talking about bear and shit. It's freaking bear news! Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl! You know I like them bears and shit.
All right, bro. I have three stories for you. These are a little bit different sometimes than one of them you will, I know you will definitely like here. So we'll dive into this one. So I don't know if you saw, there was a viral wedding photo that went around with a bear that people are claiming is seriously disturbing. Now let me describe the picture for you. You might want to Google it while I'm talking here so you get a good image. All right. In your head. So it is a man and a woman at the altar. Very nice altar, a nice wedding altar. What do we call that? My dad made one of the, I can't remember words anymore. So they are standing in front of it with the bear, which looking as their officiant.
Oh, interesting.
So it says, maybe you saw photos around the internet the other day of a Russian couple who got married by a bear. You might have thought so cute or WTF or made a ring bear pun. Okay. Don't lie. They beat us both to it.
Yeah.
true. But the whole situation is actually the worst thing ever. Now, this is not my opinion here. This is what they're saying. It's dangerous, inhumane, and perpetuates a terrible cycle of abuse. A Russian couple made headlines when pictures of them being married by a bear named Stepan surfaced on Twitter. At first glance, the photos were silly, showing the bear actually joining the couple's hands and hugging and kissing them. Stepan has been in the news before, too. His owner, Svetlana, and Yuri Patalenko, who claimed hunters found him as an abandoned three-month-old cub and gave him to them, live an unusual life with him. The Patalenkos have Stepan participate in lots of photo shoots and even eat with him at the dinner table. Though it might sound all cute and domesticated, it's anything but. Reality check. Bears are wild animals, and Russia, in particular, has a history of exploiting them. Okay, then there's another picture of them holding the hare with this really adorable bear. I don't know if you found the picture, Berlo.
See the one of them going down the aisle. At least I think this is the one.
Yeah. Look up Stepan the bear, the Russian bear, marrying Stepan. Though Stepan's owners claim he's not aggressive and has never bitten them, everyone involved in the wedding was actually at risk. It's truly disturbing and certainly dangerous for the people involved, and absolutely not in the best interest of the bear. Lisa Wathney, captive exotic animal specialist and spokesperson for the Humane Society of the United States, tells Cosmopolitan that obviously this bear is a huge animal. He's a wild animal, despite this couple's claim. Having a bear live in your home is not how an animal is domesticated. I don't know, bro. What's your take?
I mean, if the people who had this bear in their life wants a part of their wedding, it's their wedding. So, I mean,
would you feel, so let's say you were able to come up and make my wedding, whatever that was, April, or I was able to go down to yours or whatnot, and you were a part of the, the audience or whatever, you people coming to the wedding, and you all of a sudden, groomsmen walk out, I walk out, Alex comes down the aisle looking beautiful in her white dress, music's playing, and then all of a sudden she's here. And now, your officiant for the evening, and up the aisle comes this tame bear that is made the officiant of the wedding. Would you feel safe?
I would, if I knew the bear was coming, I would probably get like a back end, middle of the aisle kind of city where it's kind of like, all right, if the bear decides to attack, there's a lot of options before he gets to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'll have enough time to go, oh, the bear is killing one of their parents. Let's get out of here. Like if I was in the front row, I'd be a little bit concerned, but that's why I like to hang back. That's where the cool kids sit, and those are the ones that don't get attacked by bears.
What are your thoughts on a couple keeping a wild animal like this? Some crazy couple that's like, okay, we're going to feed this bear and keep him, and we don't know how he's treated, but this bear has been apparently booked for a lot of pictures and things like this before.
I mean, we've seen it plenty of times. I mean, a lot. It works a lot of times. A lot of times you've had that terrible they turned on them kind of story. So you know what you're getting into. I mean, it's not like you sit back and go, all right, I'm going to take this bear lightly today. Right. Normally I'm very protective, but you know what? Gloves are coming off. Let's sit back and relax, have a couple tall boys with the bear.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I could choose any animal to officiate my wedding, bear is top three, if not number one. So I'm almost a little jealous. I don't know. I sent you the link so you could see some of those wedding pictures. Imagine those pictures hanging above your mantle. Like there's a picture of you and Izzy. There's a picture from your vacation. And then, the centerpiece of the whole room, the two of you being married by a grizzly bear.
I mean, that's pretty freaking epic. I mean, it's... It's way better than the preacher we got. I mean,
they didn't offer that package.
I gotta be honest, that woman was boring. I mean, in all brutal honesty, like our photographer was also an ordained minister, and he was like joyous. Where I was kind of like, man, I kind of wish he was doing the ceremony. The person who married us was actually a friend of his who he recommended to us, and I was like, God dang, this woman's boring. But in hindsight, I would have looked up, wild animals to marry the Burls. That would be my specific Google search.
I feel like
I won't take out my nickname.
I feel like you really should be Googling wild animals to marry me and see what pops up. But if you were to pick an animal to be married by, what would you be going with?
I mean, let's see, like maybe like a talking parrot, but that seems like a little cliche, you know. It's like, oh, he says, "Do you take this woman?" Oh, how adorable,
right?
Like a real badass animal. Maybe like a wolf.
All right.
I mean, we had a backdoor wedding. I mean, that'd be pretty freaking epic if a wolf just like walked out of the woods, walked up with Izzy in her dress and me in my suit, and just sat there and dictated what we're gonna do next. That'd be cool, and it's in the dog family. So,
well, I was gonna say, if you can't get a wolf, you certainly probably could have got Casbub to officiate. The, those of you have no idea, we had a man pup twice on this show. That's right. Mm-hmm. Someone is into the fetish of dressing as a dog. Not named Mike Berlow, but we did find out some disturbing things about Mike and some of the things he's into on the side. But so yeah, Mike, that is the first story there, and that is Stepan the Bear. We don't know how he's being treated. That's the one thing I guess you can take from it. But if he's being treated all right, I mean, it's a pretty epic picture. The bear looks very clean, I noticed.
Yeah, he's pretty groomed and all. He kind of looks like a domesticated animal. I mean, it can't be that terrible. And brutally honest, if they're treating him bad, one day he's going to show them, and they don't have to worry about that again.
Yeah, that never ends well. We all saw, what was that, Bear Man? Grizzly Man.
Yeah.
That didn't end well. But the bear looks very conditioned and and shampooed. I don't know if you scroll down to the bottom, Mike. That one picture where you see his belly and him kind of sitting back, that is some nice hair right there. Nice fur, if you will. Very, could be Pantene Pro V Bear, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a good Petco commercial. You know, come for the gerbils, stay for the bear weddings.
So that is story number one. All right, Berlew. Bear story 2 and 3, a little different. I'm not making this one up. Deadly grizzlies battle humans in new discovery series called Man vs. Bear.
Interesting. Who is it, like a reality TV show where they're going to interview the bears in between the battles?
Why don't I give you? Wednesday night marks the premiere of Man vs. Bear, or what happens when 21 brave but nervous athletes battle 1,000-pound grizzlies in close proximity. Each episode of the competition series airing on Discovery features 3 athletic-minded contestants, men and women, engaging in 5 dangerous challenges against a 1,000-pound grizzly bear's Tank, Honey Bump, and her brother Bart, famous for battling Jaime Lannister and Brea Tarth in Game of Thrones. The series is hosted by CBS Sports personality Brandon Tierney, who has the radio show with Tiki Barber. You're going to see people testing the boundaries, not only of physical exertion, but of physical will and the potency of the mind, says Tierney, who spent 5 weeks shooting the show in, of course, Bear Mountain, Utah, near the sanctuary where Tank, Honey Bump, and Bart live with their owners. Okay, the contestants get fairly close up and personal with bears. No editing or camera tricks were used to separate the competitors from the 5 challenges. King of the Mountain, which is Tongue of War. Brute Force, which is Log Rolling. Apex Predator, humans and grizzlies chow down on bear food. Grizzly Heights, Honey Bump chases the contestants up a tree. And Human Prey, in which contestants in a round steel ball cage, I'm guessing like gladiators, are rocked and rolled by Bart, the biggest and strongest of the grizzly bears, at 1,100 pounds. The bears are tame, but you can't account for the small percentage of something going awry.
I feel we're going to have the celebrity versus bear TV show a couple months from now, and then we'll have to follow up with, and that's how Danny Bonaducci died.
So this is clearly, this has to be a follow-up Bear News segment, because there's no way I can't watch this and report back on it. I think you need to do the same. This has to
be DVR'd, and we're going to have a weekly update on the experience.
I think I tried to get Bart the Bear's owner on the podcast like 6 times, and they never responded to me. So maybe it's time to try to reach out again with some publicity going. going on. But I gotta say, by the names, I'm loving the name Honey Bump for Bear.
Yeah,
I'm into it.
I feel when you're dealing with bears, the one that has the cutest name is gonna let you put your guard down, and then you're like, oh crap.
So that's something I feel like I would make up, bears versus humans or whatever it's called, man versus bear, and that's apparently coming out on Discovery this week, so keep your eyes peeled, and we will...
I wouldn't be surprised when you were drunk one night, you didn't come up with the idea and accidentally called up, like, AMC, and they're like, yes!
I got this idea. You want to put people in the cage with bears, have them do competitions.
And they're just sitting back like, we would pay him, but he never left his name or number. He just talk about lake life and big old bear.
He just kept screaming, you got shenaniganed. We had no idea what it meant.
What the hell does that mean?
All right, Mike, and the third story. The third story is a sweet one. The Hershey Bears break their own teddy bear toss world record. You ever wonder what 45,650 rain-stuffed animals look like? Each year, the Capitals AHL affiliate, the Hershey Bears, holds their annual teddy bear toss game where fans throw stuffed animals on the ice, following the first Bears goal. This year, Christian Duge scored the Bears toss goal, sending a record-breaking 45,650 bears flying onto the ice. They are donated to 40 charities around Hershey, Pennsylvania, including the Milton Hershey School, Children's Miracle Network, and the American Cancer Society. Did I lose you? Oh, hold on. Speak again? It might be my phone. There you are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hear me?
Yep. What did you say about the Bears?
How do you think the goalie felt after giving up that goal and have to sit there for like 20 minutes? They had to gather up all these damn stuffed animals.
I don't know. Probably okay. I mean, it's got to be a pretty cool sight. I remember when the Devils won the Cup and they beat the Red Wings, and Marty Brodeur was talking about how all the octopus were flying on the ice, and he like hid in his net. And he was like, I don't want to touch these things. And he just tried to get as far into the net as he could. So I think teddy bears are a much better option. I think you're okay with the goal. The bad thing would be if the game was a shutout. Now what do we do?
All right. Everybody, next week, we're playing Indianapolis. We think we got a shot. So. It'd probably be the equivalent to those idiots who, like, I'm going to stay living on the top of this building until my team wins a game, and they're up there until, like, mid-December, where it gets to the point where nobody even cares at the end.
Exactly, exactly. But, Mike, that's another edition of Bear News. So we definitely got to follow up on Man vs. Bear. We'll have to report back next week. But, Mike, it's time to get out of here. It's time to go. It's time to move on to next week. Another episode in the can. Anything to promote?
I will promote some of our friends with their podcast. Since we brought up Stone Cold Steve Austin and wrestling, let's bring up the Shining Wizards podcast. Each week, these guys review all the latest wrestling events from WWE, AEW, New Japan, and they have some of the best wrestlers in the game show up on there. They've had some greats like AJ Styles and DDP, to name a few. They're really fun guys. They've done like 300, 400 episodes, so check them out. The Shining Wizards podcast.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to quickly promote... let's go with a couple of the networks that we're on real quick. You can go to Discover County Network. It's an online radio station. You can go to comingrightup.org, or you can go to Denville Radio. Three places other outside of your iTunes or your Stitcher or your normal podcast platform that you could check us out and also hear some other internet radio shows. So they're nice enough to get our content out there. So check them out. The best thing you guys can do is, one, give us a follow on social media, but the best thing you can do is send our podcast to people and give it a review on the old iTunes machine. It really helps us populate and get the podcast out there. I want to thank Stefan Alexander. Mike, it's been a pleasure to talk to you and Johnny Cage, and I hope all goes well with you. It's another day.
Finish him.
It's time to go. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye.
Later.
Will you ever leave? I've forgotten how to be alone. I've got to bury these old bones. So deep I'll never find them. So deep, I'll never find them.